Unchurned is presented by Update AI.
And as a CS manager, you're saying, okay, well, you've done X number of meetings and you've done Y number of QBRs and you've done all these things. But what happens when your fucking customer doesn't show up?
Probably until they're, 100 plus employees, they don't really need a lot of this really heavy touch, QBR, keeping engaged, et cetera. You just need a technical person to unblock them, give them the tools, make sure they're doing okay, and keep the process rolling.
And how do you just, in that environment, how do you avoid just becoming the customer support?
Yeah.
Because you're going to hear from those folks when there's a problem, right? Otherwise, it's just like, yeah, cool. Like,
I'm available after this.
At a different at different companies can mean completely different things. And like on one hand, you have like the classical CS person, but you could also have a title that says customer success, and you could be extremely technical.
You just said something really, really cool. And I don't want to gloss over it. Meet your customers where they're at.
Hey, everybody. Josh here, founder, CEO of Update AI. Welcome to this week's episode of Unchurned, our CS and BS, but as always, more BS than the CS. I'm here today. Christy's sick. You guys can't see me unless you're on YouTube, but in quotation marks, she's sick. She had enough of John and I think. Yeah, she needs a break. And I've got John here by my side. John, you want to say hi?
Yeah, what's up, guys? John Johnson here. I took last week off, so I feel like Christy's just like, fine. But John Johnson, Principal Customer Success Manager at User Testing, and just, thrilled to be here all around.
John, do you want to introduce our guest, or should I? Because, like,
I mean, you know him. Yeah. We could just, like, allude for, like, another minute or so. Like, what's your favorite thing about our guest, without saying this guest's name?
Ooh. My favorite thing about our guest is that...
Yeah.
He's been really helpful in my Update AI journey. Like, he's been quite the back channeler for me and help give me information and tips on how to use, well, he's got a new job, but previously his old job, it was very helpful for me. And I'm a big fan of his old platform. So, and he's like a nice guy. He's got that smirk on his face right now, but it's a genuine smile. It's not like a facetious smirk. He's always very nice and jolly.
I love that. That's a good answer. With that, Josh, take it away. Who are we talking
to?
Well,
I want to introduce everybody to Ryan Seams, in case you were guessing that. You got it right. You nailed it. Checks in the mail. So Ryan is the head of customer success at Assembly AI. And Ryan is new to that role. So it's been what, like a month, maybe 6 weeks, Ryan?
We are in week three right now. So just getting started. Yeah.
So you're a pro. You fixed it.
Cool. Yeah, well, he's still in it's still in boomerang territory, actually. It's so new. So, Ryan was previously running customer success. He was a senior director of customer success, and I think there was some
solution engineering and professional services.
Yeah, he did all the post-sales things at Mixpanel, and I've been a Mixpanel user for years and years now. My relationship actually with Mixpanel goes pretty far back. I used to blog for them and blah blah blah. And, but it's the type of product where you really need some white glove service from time to time to set up different types of things in the platform. And Ryan's
very technical.
Yeah.
We set up things.
Yeah. We set up things. No, I mean, Mixpanel, for those that don't know, I guess I'm assuming everybody knows Mixpanel, behavioral analytics, product analytics platform. So I grew up, in my career in tech as a product manager, product owner. And, whether you want to do an onboarding funnel to see what your drop off rate is for people to sign up or finish the flow, or whether you want to create a cohort waterfall graph that shows tracks, usage by cohorts over time, all those sorts of things. But it can get very technical. And so that's where Ryan's team comes in. And the interesting thing is that Ryan's background, why don't I just talk for Ryan's entire episode?
Yeah. I was just going to say,
Keep it going.
Yeah. We'll just keep going. He comes from a technical background, and is actually his first role, I think, you can correct me, was in a technical capacity with Mixpanel. And then, next thing flash forward 4 or 5 years, whatever it was, he's senior director of all those things, post sales at Mixpanel as they grew, hockey stick. And now he's the head of customer success at Assembly AI. Now, when we say head of customer success, Ryan, we had a little conversation before the episode. Is this, are you
as
really,
we always
what,
do? Like,
yes.
Are what you, does that mean?
What does that mean? Because we know there are people out there in the LinkedInosphere that say head of customer success, and it's head of them and themselves. But there's also head of customer success, like you're the head of a 250 person organization. So where are you in that spectrum, Ryan?
Yeah, no worries. So just getting started at Assembly, but the way that we look at things here, we're still very small. We're about a 100-person team. So head of customer success is just head of the customer success team.
You're a 100-person organization.
100-person total. So, I mean, we only have like 10 people who are even sitting remotely near customer success. And we have two CSMs right now. Cool. So there's a lot more scaling and experimenting to do. But I'm actually
you're
doing
the head
success.
Of them. You are the head of them.
So I'm doing success solutions and support engineering, but head of customer success is just an easy way to package that up all together and make it as simple.
I love that.
I like it. Yeah.
Well, okay. So we're going to jump into like tech and like software and customer success and like all that bullshit at some point. But number one, if you're watching on the YouTubes, which like more and more of you are, it's weird. You want to see our faces, I guess. It's fine. But behind Mr. Ryan Seams is, I think, every single Starbucks You Are Here mug I've ever seen. How many do you have? And how unwilling are you to relocate that wall of cups behind you?
And which is your favorite?
Yeah, so there's 98 on the wall behind me.
Oh, 98?
There's another like 40 in the closet, to be clear. There's overflow. There's some on the desk. It's bad.
Tier two. We got tier two.
I actually started my career in consulting. And so I collected mugs when I first started traveling. They were sending me, you know, all over the U.S. for consulting. I started collecting these Starbucks mugs. There were only 43, I think, in the initial release of the You Are Here series. Michigan would have been part of the initial release as it was a U.S. state or city. By the end of this, though, there's over, I think, 500 unique mugs, John, now that you can get out in the world. And so there's no way that I think anyone has them all because they are at any Starbucks anywhere in the world. And to wrap that off and tie it all off, the most, you know, interesting ones are the ones where you go to a place where there's like one Starbucks in the whole city and you have to go there. So like Marrakesh, for example. There's one Starbucks in Marrakesh and you have to go all the way to that Starbucks just to get the specific mug.
Now, I'm gonna be a little critical here. I would like to point out that you are collecting the You Are Here V2 model. This is not the original V1 model. Are you familiar with the difference? The wide base versus the thin base?
Oh, with the wide base. No, I had to collect the thin base. Yeah, no, sorry.
Yeah.
You have to be consistent.
No, so I worked at Starbucks in Seattle. It was like my first coffee job. And when I started traveling, I was like, oh, these are kind of cool. They didn't call them You Are Here mugs. I forget what they were called. There's like another series that came out before this one.
City series or something like that?
Something like that. And I got so excited. And I'll tell you like a little bit about my background. I liked people who like me. And I do a podcast now. I've got a newsletter. We do all this kind of stuff. I want people to see me, right? So I had a blog spot and I would blog. I'm aging myself here. Like everybody under 35 is like lost, but I had a little blog spot and I actually used to, anytime I would travel, I would send out notes to all of my friends to get me the Starbucks mug and then take a picture with them. It was called Mugs with Mugs. And I had this whole hashtag and it was super fun. And I tell this story because there's a point, I swear. I was living in California and I had a friend who was in Columbia, South Carolina. I was like, I don't have South Carolina. You should, hey, kid, like, and I would just text people that were going through there and nobody could find the South Carolina mug. And I don't know if they've changed this, but up until about 3 years ago, South Carolina did not have You Are Here mug, and I have been looking for that. I don't have my collection anymore, as I've said.
It's
but
because,
if anybody,
John, it's because they refused to take the Confederate flag off of it.
They did. That's probably true. Did you Google it? Is that true?
No, that's just fine.
Okay, fine. No, but that I actually there's a girl that I know in Columbia, South Carolina, and every time you're like, hey, they got one yet? You got? Give me that. I need it. Give me the cup. Give me the cup.
What was that sound you made, John?
You know what that sound is.
Yeah. Sounds delicious.
But we're going to talk about...
Wait, because I want to get involved in this conversation.
Oh, Josh
too.
Has to talk about it.
Do you know
stuff?
That my okay. first interaction was Ryan, with Ryan? I mean, Ryan, like for every 10 meetings that you have with somebody for the first time, what percentage of them bring up the mug within the first 10 seconds?
Oh, it's probably like a 70% hit rate. I mean, look, people like traveling, coffee, yeah. collecting, art. One of those things is going to resonate with somebody.
I'm surprised it's not 9.5 out of 10, to be honest with you. I want to know,
usually the 30% is like where you have like five people on the call and three of them have already asked and the other two are brand new to the conversation. They're like, should I talk about this? Yeah. Eventually they ask.
But it's so funny that we're all so familiar with the mugs because I was in consulting too. And that was my gift to myself when I was traveling the world, was like, I'm going to go buy myself a mug. So I have probably about a dozen of them upstairs and I actually use them. Actually, I don't have any like, I kind of still live a bachelor life a little bit. I don't even have any like water glasses. I just have a dozen Where You Are Here Starbucks mugs up in my cabinet.
I love that.
Yeah.
Ryan, before we move on from this interesting topic, is there one cup or city that you wish you had that you don't?
Oh, that I wish I had that I do not today. I don't know that there's necessarily like one city. I think of it more like, what are the places that I would like to travel that I haven't been to yet? So personally, you know, that would be places like, I want to go to Peru and go to Machu Picchu. I want to go to New Zealand, do some hiking there as well. I haven't been there. So I think of it more like, where have I not been, than necessarily like, I got to go to this specific city to get a mug.
Yeah. Do you only have mugs from cities that you've been to?
Besides three of the mugs that were gifted to me by my mother, yes.
Okay. So you know, it's kind of like, you know, your little pin on a map.
John, what? I want to just keep asking questions of the mugs and I want to look at the analytics of this episode afterwards and I want to see like what the drop off and see how long we can go just on the mugs for 45 minutes until we have like the last person drop off.
Thankfully I've at least listened to the podcast a few times, so I was a little prepared for the
so hot, you knew the banter. You knew the BS.
I got a way for us to extend this just a little bit. Okay, yeah, Ryan, I want you to take a step back and look at the wall. Take a step back and look at your wall. I want to do this with me. Okay. Starting from the left, I want you to count four down and I want you to count seven over.
Okay.
Okay. Grab that mug. Take it off the wall. What city is it?
It's Madrid.
It's Madrid. Tell me the story behind
that mug.
I have
that mug too.
I knew it.
You knew it.
When did you get that mug?
Yeah. So my wife and I moved to London for 2.5 years with Mixpanel to open their first international office. And during that time, had the pleasure of visiting customers around the world, but also, of course, getting to go on fun little weekend trips from London. And so Madrid was a lovely little weekend trip with my wife before going to Barcelona to visit colleagues and customers.
That's awesome. I love that.
Can we just keep doing like 20 more of these?
No.
I can tie in something about customer success or my story to each of the mugs too, if you want me to.
No, but do actually, it. That's... Done. Yeah, do it. Okay, row 7, column 3.
It's like we're playing Plinko over here.
Parker over here.
Row 7, column 3. No, that's it. You got it. Josh said, this is what we're doing. We're leaning in, guys. Christy's not here to tell us to shut up.
Yeah, so this one's going to be Tennessee, not the most interesting in terms of
the only Ten I see.
Yeah, I've been to Tennessee actually twice, both of them with my family. We went on a trip to Dollywood actually when I was
years. We need to let's go.
This is so good.
We're going to relate one to customer success.
Well, that would have led me on my journey to customer success because my family taught me to enjoy traveling, how to have a great personality like this, and how to
deal a pro.
With people on podcasts, you know?
I love how you said how to deal with people, not like how to interact with great podcasts. No, I'm going to fucking deal with you.
Deal with challenging personalities.
At some point, I got to push back a little bit, right?
All right, John, transition us. You're good at those.
Okay, Ryan. How are you feeling today?
Feeling good.
All right. You said you're 3 weeks. Josh, give me a second. Give me some space. You're 3 weeks into a new role. You're coming in from a large functional organization that is crushing it in the market, right? Into a new role that is kind of in its infancy, not just learning how to walk, but like you're taking some big strides, right? You're coming in with a lot of experience with professional services, with support, things like that. How do you think about what you came from, which is lots of process, lots of function, lots of success stories, lots of things built on success stories into a world that maybe doesn't have that and is a little bit more nebulous. And then how do you like strategically forecast getting to that ideal state?
And sorry, before you answer that, I don't think we've actually introduced what Assembly AI does. Ryan, would you mind?
I'm a fan
of their work, but can we give that context for people?
Yeah. So what Assembly AI does is it's a speech to text AI platform. So essentially you can integrate our APIs into your product. You can take a conversation like this podcast that we're recording right now, and you can immediately get things like, what's a summary of the conversation? What were the topics discussed? How were the podcast hosts to the guests that they had and the sentiment of those different folks on the podcast, all that fun stuff. But essentially it's an easy way to turn speech into text so that of course you can do whatever you want with that text downstream inside your own product. And
I'm seeing
AI, for example, would be using a similar speech to text AI platform to record calls and provide summaries and all that fun stuff.
But wait, so actually you, and we'll get to your question, John. I've just kind of derailed you, maybe by design. So you are infrastructural for companies. Like you don't power Update AI, but God knows I've sat in on enough of like private equity investor conversations where they've wanted me to tell them about my experience with Assembly AI and stuff like that. So you could power a startup like Update AI, our underlying transcription. But it sounded like you guys also, do you also have a consumer facing or an end user facing, paradigm too? No,
we do not. So all infrastructure based. Yep.
But you can, but the stuff that you mentioned there, like the action item detection, the sentiment detection, you can power that infrastructurally as well. So that like almost like ChatGPT would, right? I guess.
Yeah. Okay. So out of the box with Assembly AI, there's certain basically audio intelligence features that are built in, like the summary, the transcript, the topics, etc. And then with our SDKs and the way that we've set up our product, you can basically take the output of the actual podcast, the transcript, and feed that into a LLM and do more advanced analysis. And so obviously things like summary is like a basic use case or action items. But, you know, we have some customers who are feeding, you know, I don't know, like a tutor transcript of someone helping someone solve a problem, feeding that into the LLM afterwards and actually being like, did they get the question correct? Was that the right answer to the problem? And so we make it really easy for you to just do speech to text and then chain that into some LLMs as well.
So you don't compete with the LLMs. And LLM, by the way, for those large language model, these are the OpenAIs of the world, the Anthropics of the world. So you could just use your summarization, your action item detection, your sentiment detection, right? Which would supplant somebody going to the LLM for that. But it sounds like that's not necessarily, they're not at odds, you're saying.
No, not at all. So, I mean, again, audio intelligence, there's certain things out, you know, from speech to text, from a transcript that we're going to infer that you're going to want to know and that most of our customers are going to use. But we're also finding more and more, right, that people aren't just using speech to text in isolation. They're not just wanting transcripts. They're wanting to do intelligence on those transcripts or multiple transcripts, right? Maybe with the same company or the same person even, right? And so we have customers that are taking not just that one, hey, here's the transcript and here's a summary. They want to do some more advanced analysis and we make it really easy for you to go and you know, use that as an input to an LLM.
Cool. Well, we'll talk later in the quarter, in the year. All right, John, back to you. You had some question for
I don't
Ryan
know. I don't even know.
Sleep. Let's
I'm
ask
curious.
It again, see if we get
no,
more excited.
I'm gonna pivot. That was stupid. It's fine. I said a lot of words and
no, it
would have been a one word answer.
John, you are meaningful. You are special.
I know,
but I'm already on something else. Okay, we'll go there, and then I already have like nine more. So what I'm looking for is I really love these transitions from big companies, lots of process, lots of people, into something that's like, hey, you did that before. Can you do something for us too, right? And maybe that's something you're interested in. There's a hunger there. Walk me through kind of the process of you're 3 weeks in. Like this is so new for you. How do you start building the foundation and what inputs or outputs are you looking for to kind of set your tone for what you want to do long-term within this organization?
Yeah, I think it's a great question.
And to be clear,
I think if you're going to make this transition, you have to enjoy the chaos. You have to enjoy the fact that things are not going to be built.
Yes.
You're going to be the one who's figuring out what are the problems? Where do we have to, could we make the biggest impact? What should my priorities be? You have to really enjoy that process, right? And, I think with anyone who's, you know, looking to make a switch, like, it's like, what do you like about your current job and what do you don't like? And
can I pause you there? This is Josh's interruption day. That's such an important point because there are so many people out there that are like, oh yeah, well, first of all, there's a lot of people out there, unfortunately, now that'll take any job that comes their way, right? But there's a lot of people out there for good reason, but there's a lot of people out there that are like, oh, I'd love to work in a startup. I'd love to get out of the monotony of a larger company. But you have to really not only like, oh yeah, sure, I'd be willing to kind of, it's okay that it's spaghetti inside. I can deal with that. It's not that you can deal with that. It's that you want to embrace that. Like you want that excites you because it is so much crap that you have to wade through and make into an order and into a process. And there's so much excitement that can be behind that and the opportunity. But if you're not like jazzed to do it, you're just going to like, you're going to peter out very quickly. So I think that's really well said, Ryan. Like you've got to really want to be in that, you know, first 100-person company, like what you've just joined.
100%. And obviously having made the switch recently, people ask, oh, hey, why'd you make the switch? I mean, at the end of the day, like I had a list written down. That's like, what brings me joy about my day to day? And what are the things that I don't like about my day to day? And at some point, right, during the course of a company scaling and growing, you know, the company maybe doesn't fit what you like to do day to day anymore. And for me, you know, I was really looking for an opportunity to go somewhere where we were smaller, we can move quickly, we can iterate and try things and see what works and know that, you know, hey, not everything's going to work, not everything's going to stick, but like change is okay and change shouldn't be scary. We're doing it in the best interest of moving forward and building a better team, building a better company and building something better for our customers. And I think in terms of the process, right, getting started, trying to figure out what should my priorities be, what's going on. You know, I haven't changed jobs in 10 years, so I have the benefit of having tools like a Gong or an Update AI where I can go watch call recordings and understand what our customers are saying. I mean, when I started at Mixpanel, right, the only way to do that was to join the call and be there awkwardly on the side like, hey, my name's Ryan. I'm just shadowing. I'm going to put myself on mute and say nothing for the rest of this call. That's weird, right? Nowadays, you could just start watching calls right away. And so a lot of what I'm doing is watching customer calls, interviewing the current people on the team about what's going well, where can we improve, what's slowing them down, and then just getting kind of a whole wide plethora of viewpoints around, you know, the go-to-market organization, the engineering organization, the research organization, what should those priorities be, and how have the interactions been with the team. But, you know, I do have the pleasure of having a little bit of a head start, having, you know, the 10-person team that's already in place, and they have been doing a lot of great things. But a lot of what I'm doing is trying to figure out what are those, you know, friction points and areas that we really need to focus in on to scale this to the next level.
That's great. Okay. So one of the things that I'm, you know, I think I'm really interested in specifically with this AI kind of world that we're growing into, right, is like customer success, not necessarily like AI is replacing customer success, but how are you thinking about bringing CSMs on as strategic partners for utilizing AI insights, right? For like, for really coaching people, I guess I don't want to answer the question for you, but like, do you look at usage? Do you look at out? Like, what are the outcomes that you're driving? And what are the, like, how are you tying value to the individuals, right? I mean, we have to prove our value every day now, right? So how do you think about that from, you know, this kind of new landscape of modeling? Josh, I know Josh just hired his first head of CS as well. So I guess this might be a kind of interesting conversation for you two to have. I'm sure you're doing it internally with much more expletives in your group chat. But I guess that's kind of a question for the group is like, how do you think about this when these tools are built to be force multipliers?
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously all the classic data you can look at around, hey, you know, how many queries are being made to my API? How many questions are being asked? How many answers do we get? All that stuff. Right. And I'm, you know, I think you'd be remiss to just like, dismiss that and like move on. But I think, you know, those are things we're actively looking at, right? And really that's more around like, is there a healthy customer here, right? Do we have consumption of the model? Yeah. Are they utilizing at the right rate? Are they utilizing the right features, right? Or the right models within the set that we have? I think those things are all important, but ultimately what's really different, I think, when you think about AI, right, is like the result of that model is going to be used downstream inside someone else's product that you may have no access or inference into, is this thing a success or not? And what does that mean in terms of, you know, the way that you work with customers is that you have to be really close to your customers and talking to them to really understand what they're doing with the model, what use case they're ultimately integrating it for, the feedback that they're getting from their users, from their engineers, from their own internal customer success teams even, right? Is it working or not? And so I think it's very different in the fact that you can have all this data and it might look great and somebody's consumption's going through the roof and you'll have a conversation with them and they're like, I didn't even know we were integrated there. And like, why are we spending so much money with you? And so it's really critical that you have, you know, the right channels, the right cadence, the right communication with your customers to really figure out, you know, is this a success or not? It's not so easy just to look at the data like you might do in a classical CS motion.
It's a really good point because we have a lot of vendors and processors, sub-processors that we work with that, you know, help us with our calendaring integration and our transcription service, right? And there is a tendency like to, I guess my question is, how do you just, in that environment, how do you avoid just becoming the customer support?
Yeah.
Because you're going to hear from those folks when there's a problem, right? Otherwise, it's just like, yeah, cool. Like my transcription is just fine. Like I'll talk to you at renewal.
I mean, I think that's pretty common, right? If you're thinking about the average CS team in that space, like that's probably what you're going to see. I think if you're thinking about the teams that are maybe innovative or doing something different, right? I mean, first things first, like where do your customers like to communicate? If you're working in AI, you're probably working with developers, engineers, product managers. You should be in Slack. That's the one place they're going to actually talk to you and communicate with you and be transparent with you. So step one, let's get the right people in the right medium for communication and have a conversation there. You're not going to have probably the best, you know, feedback or engagement if you're like, hey, let's set up a quarterly business review and let's do it on Zoom. Like that's just not really what, you know, your audience is interested in ultimately. And so step one, figure out who your customer is and where they want to talk to you. And then like, let's, you know, start to build in some automation and some strategy from there around not just being support, but being proactive and, you know, applying, you know, changes in your product to the use cases that they've talked to you about in the past.
Yeah.
You just said something really, really cool. And I don't want to gloss over it. Meet your customers where they're at. You said if you're working with developers, getting on a Zoom call may not be the best process. Sending them an email might not be the best thing, right? That probably terrifies a lot of people that spend their days with their nose in code. I do think that this is a maturity inflection point for our industry right now, right? It goes to show like all of our tools are built to track email and to track Gong and to track Chorus and like all of these things. And as a CS manager, you're saying, okay, well, you've done X number of meetings and you've done Y number of QBRs and you've done all these things. But what happens when your fucking customer doesn't show up? We're dealing this with right now at user testing. Like we, it's so hard for us to get all of the right people on a call together because they're engineers, they're developers, they're UX researchers that are just not the right, they're just not used to it, right? So then how do we also absorb like the process chains with this culture? If we're going to be leaning more into engineers, how do we build the durable process to track what we're doing as a CSM to prove value? Because I'll be honest, it kind of scares me if we're talking with engineers because they don't know how to tie ROI back to, you know what I mean? Like it's just not in the skill set. It's something we can teach them, but it's one of those things where that puts up a lot of roadblocks, right? So if you're meeting where they're at, and it maybe isn't in one of the traditional spaces, I love Slack groups. I've got some Slack channels with my customers, but like I then go into Tango and I log, had a Slack conversation, you know, and I have, it's like a manual process. Like there's a lot of kind of this and moments when you have to go outside of these two things
let's
that
just,
we're
let's
designed
just not,
to do.
Let's just, can we just all agree that community is not the answer? That one of these like platforms, it's like, oh, I'm going to spin up these blog forums and threads like it's 1989. Like, you know, like I hate that. There's this trend right now. This is me just evangelizing vitriol. there's this trend right now in these forums. Like, no, nobody wants to go to some like GitHub looking documentation forum that like a community contributor with a little badge type something in, blah, blah, blah. Like, I get it. If you're a giant company, you have to, but I don't think that's the answer. And Ryan, when you were at Mixpanel, this is about 6 months to go to a year ago, you were, I don't know if it was your thing, but you were instrumental in helping to institute a new Slack community, a community for Mixpanel users on Slack, like a separate Slack instance. Now, I, as somebody who, you know, kind of is a renegade to the rules, I just continue to email you and all the people that I know and love at Mixpanel. Because I'm an old school email guy. But how did that email, how did that Slack community go? Because you're meeting people where presumably they were at.
Yep, yep. So the Slack community, geez, we would have launched a little over 2 years ago now. We grew to about 8,000 users in there. I don't know the exact number of active users. Slack defines them differently based on, I don't know, they have crazy active user metrics for billing. It's like somebody had their mouse cursor in the workspace for 15 seconds and read two messages as an active user. But in any case, the community was really a space. I talked about meeting customers where they're at. Like your top enterprise customers, you should have a joint Slack channel with them and you can communicate there and you can, give updates, whatever. But you can't take that experience and scale it to any customer, right? You can't have every free customer in their own Slack channel. And you certainly don't want them all in maybe like an official Slack channel associated with, your company. And so I think the big trend that I'm seeing in community, right, if you're talking, meet the customers where they're at, is give them a space where users can actually just chat and connect with each other and hopefully answer each other's questions. And that's what we did at Mixpanel. We launched a Slack community. We created, some guidelines. We actually modeled it a lot after DBT. I would say they're probably like one of the innovators in this space.
What's DBT?
DBT, it's a data modeling platform. So basically DBT, if you have a bunch of data in your data warehouse, your analytics engineers want to keep track of what tables should be used for what metric and what query should represent an active user. You can use DBT to basically keep track and catalog all of that data. And then, of course, once you have a catalog of it, it's really easy downstream for you to like send it to, Looker, to Mixpanel, to your customer success platform, et cetera.
Did you find that it was successful? Because I find that I am a member of some of these communities. And for the most part, the ones that I see there's more activity in, like we talked about it for Update AI, should we do a community? But it's like, no, because the ones that are most successful are where they're more technical. And so you get these folks that can really the growth marketing lead gen hacker communities and stuff like that, or like, give me the SQL query to do this, right? Which fits really well to your use case for Mixpanel. What did you find in terms of the engagement of people?
Yeah, so we found that it was actually quite successful to the point where like our support engineers were spending an outsized amount of time on answering questions in the community, which is great though. You'd rather have more demand than less demand, right? And so from there, it actually became kind of a matter of how do we scale this? And I mean, what we're seeing now, at least, is the trend, right? Is like, hey, if you're going to have a community, you could also have an AI bot in there that's going to go and say, hey, you can ask the bot first. I don't know. What should I do to use this API call? And then the bot gives you at least an initial answer, right? And then, if I still have questions, I can go and actually just ask the community and get help from, somebody else that's done it before and that's an expert. And so that's also something we had done at Mixpanel at the end is, basically had an AI bot who could field kind of the L1 initial questions, get the user to ask the right question, and then, the community helping each other with some of the more like L2.
You built the bot into the community?
We built it in the community. We bought it off the shelf. We didn't build it ourselves. We purchased it.
That's smart.
I want to talk about like trends. Like that's kind of one of the things that we've been talking about. I know it's kind of a yawn, but like you've been in customer success for a while. You've done it successfully. Then you took on PS and then you took on these other things, right? What do you see outside of AI or inside of AI, whatever? What do you see kind of coming next for CS? Like what is an evolution that you're looking forward to this year within the industry that you may either implement or lead, the market on?
I think there's going to be obviously like all the buzzwords that you're going to hear around, efficiency, scalability, digital, those could go on and on and on. More with less. I think the reality is, there's all of that, which is more of like from the boardroom perspective, what's the P&L look like, et cetera. I think if you really go talk to the people on your team who are doing the work with the customers, the amount of things in CS that people are still doing that's extremely repetitive is massive. And the biggest opportunity for us as a profession or whatever you want to call it to move CS forward is how do we automate those repetitive tasks with whether it's workflows or AI, automate the repetitive tasks so that people can actually spend their time on the customers and the issues that actually matter. And we do a lot less of the like, let's be proactive and check a box because my boss told me that's going to be the most,
some playbook said something somewhere. Yeah.
And instead you can be like, hey, like what customers actually need my help right now on a problem that's going to lead to retention or expansion. And so it's not like, I don't know, everything's a fire drill and right. we're doing all these other things too. It's just like, how can I focus my time on what customer and what matters right now? And if we can eliminate a lot of these repetitive tasks, you know, it would go a long way towards that. Now, I don't think AI is going to solve that tomorrow. There's still some, you know, documentation writing that people have to do and some culture you have to build within your team that like
it's the number one repetitive task.
Anytime you answer a question, put it back, put it on the internet, put it in the doc, put it somewhere so that you don't get asked the same thing over.
So, so what's the number one, you're 3 weeks into this, but what's the number one task at this point that you would like to automate and save time, shave seconds off of at Assembly AI?
I think for us right now, it's actually in the pre-sales process. And it's all about how do we show the customer not just, hey, here's where we are, we're Assembly AI, but like, how do we bring the magic to the developer of like, oh my gosh, I used the API. It was so easy. I sent it one request and I got everything I needed back to just go and build my product. And that's what you want to be as an API product, right? If your infrastructure, it should be so easy to send a request in, get a response and go on building and just doing whatever you were doing before that. Just go live the rest of your day like you were before. If you have a problem there, right? Or you don't understand how to use it, you don't understand the use case, any of those things are going to slow down that magic moment for the developer, which is really what's going to, you know, allow the product to go and take off. And so, you know, I think depending on the segment, right, those things are different. But for example, I'm only 3 weeks in, but I was surprised to learn that, you know, we only published our first SDK 6 months ago. You know how hard it is for a developer to integrate an API without an SDK? That's they expect SDKs are table stakes, right, in 2024. And so, you know, how do we just keep building, not just even the SDK, but all these, you know, use cases and examples, et cetera, that build on those SDKs. The developer can just go in, read the docs, figure out for their use case, what's the request? What do I need to put in? Great. And now I can keep going on with building, right? And that's ultimately what they want to go do.
Yeah. We have a little jargon alert that we play here. And SDK stands for Software Development Kit. For those of you that are unaware, it is something that engineers, it's basically like a Lego building plans, right? So you just need to know how to build things with what you've been given, right? So companies like yours will give an SDK to engineers so that they can build within the framework to achieve their goals with what they have purchased. That's it. That's all I had.
You can think of changing hundreds or thousands of lines of code to like 10 or less.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So Josh tried to interrupt you with a question about what's the one thing that is repetitive. I'm interested in that as well, but also skill sets, right? So ideally at some point your team is going to grow. You're going to hire more people. How are you looking at that, not hiring to fill the repetitive things that you're going to answer, but then also like, how do you identify what your team needs, not just as a body, but as a skill to kind of come in and build this ideal utopia that you have for your company?
Yeah. I think one thing that I always like to say about CS, and if you've ever interviewed with me, you would probably hear me say this, but I think, you know,
I'm available after this.
at different companies can mean completely different things. And like, on one hand, you have like the classical CS person who's like doing renewals and upsells, they're running QBRs, they're doing monthly check-ins, they own the relationship and the customer, right? That's like one side of CS. But you could also have a title that says customer success, and you could be extremely technical, be doing API level integrations, be teaching a developer how to put code inside of an application, et cetera, right? And I think of those, frankly, as like two very distinct skill sets. You can find unicorns who do both, but let's be honest, those are the people that are going to get promoted a bunch and 10 times over and probably like jump companies at some point, because it's really hard to be able to do all of that commercial relationship building type of activities, but also be extremely technical and in the weeds and, you know, coaching a developer through some process of implementing. And so I think, you know, to your question, when you're saying like skill sets, et cetera, I think you need to figure out, you know, which of those things is more valuable to your customer. Apply that lens per segment and go, you know, send your resources towards that. And what I mean by that, to send like an example, right, is if you think about the enterprise and you think about a very complex organization that's trying to adopt product analytics or even, you know, Assembly AI, right, you're going to have many, many people who are involved in that process. You're going to have developers, you're going to have that developer's manager, you're going to have like the head of the department, you're going to have like maybe the CTO or the CPO or maybe the chief AI officer is a title I've been heard, you know, throwing around. But you're going to have to be very multi-layered in the way that you communicate with that customer. And that commercial relationship skill set is going to be really important for the upper end of that, where you have those key executive relationships and you talk about ROI and you talk about why, you know, you spend, you know, $1 million or whatever it happens to be with the tool and why they actually get value out of that, right? But you're also going to need that really technical person to go help that person integrate the product regularly and keep it refreshed and keep it up to date. And so, you know, in the enterprise, you might need both. If you're thinking about a, you know, commercial, and you're thinking about a startup who's adopting your platform, all of those roles I mentioned might be one person.
Right.
And they really probably only just need the technical thing done and they don't care about any of the rest of that stuff. And so you're really causing friction if you're trying to do all this commercial relationshipy, et cetera, type activities when all they really want is to just get the tech to work and get value out of it. And so, you know, depending on your segment and what your customers actually need, figure out those skill sets and, you know, you can map those to roles. Obviously, you could try to do everything all in one and see how it goes. But, you know, often it's like, you know, per segment, per geography, et cetera, how do we want to go to market and deploy those resources?
That's great. How are you thinking about segments right now? That's something that kind of keeps, you talk a lot about, obviously everybody talked about segmentation in this, but who owns segmentation, like in your mind, in your ideal state?
You mean like if it's like the operations team or the CS team?
Yeah.
I would say the one key lesson I've learned about segmentation is your whole company should use the same segmentation. If you're using a different segmentation.
How many people actually follow that though? Let me be honest.
Exactly. So I'm just going to say that should be lesson one is like, if you as a CS team are not using the same segmentation as your sales team, your go-to-market team, your CEO, whatever, that should be step one. Just do the same one. You may have to make compromises and it might not be perfect, but it's going to help you speak the same language and go to market the same way when you think about all those different resources and skill sets involved with the customer.
That's the title. That's the title of this episode.
Secondly, at least the way that I think about segmentation, the other piece there is really about, you know, what is the complexity of that organization and what are they going to need from you from a skill set perspective? And to be honest, for me, you know, if you're catering towards, you know, venture-backed startups with highly skilled technical people, probably until they're, 100 plus employees, they don't really need a lot of this really heavy touch, QBR, keeping engaged, et cetera. You just need a technical person to unblock them, give them the tools, make sure they're doing okay, and, you know, keep the process rolling. And you can always set up, you know, coverage models and segmentation models where if you need whatever the commercial skill set or the technical skill set, you could have a pool of resources that you bring in and it'll be a lot more efficient than trying to like just throw tons and tons of the different skill sets at segments that don't actually need them ultimately to be successful.
How are you thinking about expanding and upselling your accounts at Assembly AI? And the reason I ask that is because, you know, we have a transcription provider, as I told you, and there are times where I've been in casual conversation with them and I've been telling them about something that we're going to do, this new use case. And then it's like by the way, you know, you can do that with us. And it's like, we never even knew that. And there's times where, and I like these guys, by the way, there's times where they will introduce like the next released version of their model, like, you know, 4.0 is going to be so much better than 3.0 and it's in beta now, or now it's in GA and here's the pricing for it. And I feel like there's a lot of just missed opportunity. I've been like, well, if 4.0 is so much better, like run some of my data through it and show me the difference.
Yeah.
You know, or like, what are you thinking about as far as ways to be top of mind from a proactive expansion perspective?
Yeah, it's really funny you mentioned that specifically. I think one thing with AI that's very different from B2B SaaS or other, you know, just products where you have engineers is like the input's going to run through a model and you're going to get an output. And it's not always deterministic or clear, right? Why that input led to that output. And I think in AI, that's what really makes it hard on like the customer success side to show like we are listening to your feedback. We are making progress. We are pushing new features. We are making it better. Because you don't know ultimately. It's not like a product release where it's like, whoa, we have this brand new feature. You can go click around here and voila, here's the value that you asked for 6 months ago, 12 months ago, whatever it is.
Right.
In AI, it's a little more nuanced, right? And so I think to your point there, right, showing versus telling, I think is critical. But in order to do that, right, you have to know that customer and their use case and why they bought the product in the first place and who the different players are. Otherwise, you're going to have no chance at actually being, you know, contextual and relevant in how you show them. Anyone can tell, right? Anyone can go write a blog post and, you know, push a bunch of ads and talk a lot on social media. But showing that it really is better, showing that it really is more valuable to your use case does require a bit of that human creativity. And ultimately, I mean, I think that lives firmly with customer success to do.
100%.
That's awesome. That's great. Thank you so much, Ryan. That was awesome. The last question that I have really is there anything that you want to tell Josh directly that you've been afraid to over your years of friendship? Now's the time. Wow. You've got him. He can't do anything about it. I'll make sure they don't edit it out. We'll use it. I'll give you a clip. You can put it on TikTok.
Open range.
I mean, it's funny, right? My answer would have been different, you know, pre at Mixpanel versus now post at Assembly AI. You know, I've gone from running customer success for him to trying to turn him into a prospect and run him through a sales process. So I think it is very different, but I don't think I have anything like particularly bad. I mean, look, Josh has done a bunch for the customer success community.
He's incredible. He is.
I don't think there's anything bad to say.
Oh,
here.
I'm blushing.
I got one bad thing. I'm going to say one bad thing.
You can say more than and, one.
No, but there's only one that won't be edited out. Almost on every single podcast, Josh says, "I don't know much about the CS industry. I'm just bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. Go talk to these experts." And I have learned more from this guy in conversations over what do we have ribeye at your place a year and a half ago in New York
and brisket
and the people that he has introduced me to. And I think he undervalues himself in this industry in a way
that breaks
my heart a little
bit. It's true. Like I wish that I had sat
he's doing it again.
In the seat of a CSM or their shoes, but I have not. And
I don't think you should have.
So I can give you so much academic stuff and so many of the learnings from you guys. And every time I'm on an episode with somebody on this program, I do learn. And yet it's so different having not actually sat in that seat myself.
But the value that I'll say is like those of us that have been in the seat for like 12 or 14 years or however it was long, like we are the kings and queens of like exceptions. Like, oh, that won't work for me because, right? And we just self-exclude ourselves because of the experience. And when you do bring that academic like leadership role, and Ryan, this is kind of getting to where you're at too. Like you've got a ton of experience. There's going to be a lot of things that worked before that aren't going to work now. And you're going to try things that the people on your team would be like, oh, we tried that. I'm not going to do that. And like part of being a leader is like, okay, you tried it, but we didn't have this, right? And I think that's something, Josh, that you do really, really well is saying, you may have tried it, but you tried it doing X or Y. Now we're going to do it with Z.
It makes me uncomfortable when you're so nice to me because then...
No, it's fine. I'm going to send you uncomfortable pictures after we get done with this. So
those pics that go in the private library.
Yeah, buddy.
Ryan, last question for you, and then we'll jump. Why did you join, other than the 500K base and the 2% points of the
$2 billion.
Yeah. Like, why did you join?
I wish.
Yeah. Well, if you were the sales leader, then, you know, you could always switch functions. Why did you join Assembly AI from a company perspective? I know these guys are growing, right? And there's a lot of excitement in this industry and with that particular company, but also from the role perspective too, of like what the head of CS at a growing 100-person company, what's your 5-year goal other than don't die? Anybody get that reference? I hope.
Don't die.
Yeah. Look, I mean, for me, look, I really enjoy building. And so the idea that like you're in a growing company, a growing space, there's going to be lots of opportunity to build new processes, teams, customer feedback loops, whatever you want to call it. Right. And so one is to go back to building versus not to say that you're not building at a 500-person company, but you know, you're building at a different pace and at a different speed, right? And so that's number one. Number two, I wanted to be in a space that is constantly evolving and changing. When I joined Mixpanel, we were creating the category of product analytics. There's a lot of education. There's a lot of change. Everything's different. The competition matters. The marketing matters. There's just a lot going on. Like, again, I like the chaos, right? And so this idea of being in a space where you're defining the category and you're really learning and growing with it, I think is a huge plus. And then, you know, last for me, I've been at Mixpanel for almost a decade, right? And so the culture is really important to me. And obviously, only been here 3 weeks, but during the interview process, I I got all the feels and the vibes that I did when I joined Mixpanel 10 years ago. And so at the end of the day, like, I want to go run the whole journey all over again.
Yeah.
Where I end, I don't know, but I'd love to leave where we have an awesome CS team. It's very well respected. And we've done something really cool in the category that we're in. And for me, that's exciting. And it was a couldn't pass up the opportunity.
Awesome. I love that. It chaos is a growth engine. It's not a red flag for you. And that's so cool. I love hearing that. Like, I'm grateful that you exist.
Thank you for joining us.
Is there anything
Ryan.
You want to plug? Oh yeah. I was asked, like, is there anything you want to plug? Do you want to, like, I don't know, what's up?
Everything no. well, if you're looking for speech to tech AI solution,
yeah. How you doing?
No. Look, if you're interested in learning more, you have specific questions, whatever, I'm available on LinkedIn. I almost always reply and say, yes, I'll do a one-to-one. If this podcast gets enough demands, I know there's too many of those. I will have something bad to say about Josh finally. But if you are interested, reach out, connect with me on LinkedIn, and more than happy to discuss. So
I love it. Well, thank you so much for your time. Josh, take us home.
Thank you for your time. Bye, everybody.